This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Nervous.
All right. Give me Buckingham, please.
Thank you. Nurse Gelato, when we broke, we were talking about your interactions via my chart with Lindsay Clancy on December 2nd of 2022, right?
Yes.
And so the last one on December 2nd at 2:35 p.m. was from you to her. And then on December 3rd, do you recall that a MyChart message was sent on that day at 7:24 p.m.?
I do.
And you were able to review that message after it was sent?
I was.
And she reports to you basically that she didn't want to wait till to let you know some things that were fresh in her mind. And it says, last night I didn't take Ativan. My dose had been the night before at 1 a.m., only slept about 4 hours at the beginning of the night, about 9:30 to 1:45. Then I dozed off for maybe another 45 minutes from 4:30 to 5. Today, all day, I had horrible, intrusive thoughts and felt deeply depressed. I finally took a 0.5 of Ativan at 6 p.m., and now the thoughts are gone, and I feel good. You recall receiving that message?
I do.
Okay. And fair to say there was no more communication between you and her until December 6th.
Correct. I believe December 3rd was a Saturday.
And you actually were out of the office on the 5th with sickness.
I was.
But you were aware that Lindsay Clancy did reach out to the office on December 5th.
Yes.
And that the nurse was able to respond to her to let her know that you were out sick, right?
Yes.
And Lindsay Clancy responds at 8:30 a.m. that day that that she would just Lindsay reaches out to the nurse and says, that's fine, she'll reschedule, and that she, in fact, changed her appointment with Letitia Dukes to a virtual appointment for that day for December 5th.
Yes.
So on the 6th, when you return, did you have a scheduled meeting with Lindsay Clancy?
Yes.
And on this particular meeting on December 6th of 2022, do you recall if that was an in-person or a virtual visit?
It was an office visit.
Okay.
In person.
And so just kind of looking at the note from that day from December 6th,
mm-hmm.
It says encounter date December 6th. It says filed on December 7th. In the under chief complaint history, do you have it in front of you?
Yes.
The second paragraph says patient has verbally consented to this video visit. Is that just something that sometimes pre-fills into the narrative?
Yes.
But your memory was that this was an in-person visit.
It was.
Was Lindsay Clancy there by herself or with somebody else?
She brought in her husband, Patrick.
Had you met him before?
I had not.
Had you talked to him before?
I had not.
As part of your treatment plan or your course of treatment with Lindsay Clancy, was it your practice to speak with collateral individuals?
Yes.
And in this instance, did you feel a need to speak to collateral individuals up to this point?
Not up to this point.
If you did, would you have requested that of her?
Yes.
And do you need her express permission to do that?
I do.
So on this particular day, she presented with her husband, Patrick, correct?
Correct.
And was there anything different about your approach to the meeting than your previous meetings with her?
No.
You still go through history, you go through how she's doing now, you do your mental status exam, you do your screenings, right?
Yes.
And so first, just let's talk quickly about the screenings. The Edinburgh screen, what was her score on this day when she came in? Do you remember?
21.
Okay. And the GAD-7, fair to say that screen was a 19.
Yes.
So would you say that it was pretty consistent with the last time that you saw her?
Objection.
What's your objection?
My objection is that that's not right. She's now got a 21 Edinburgh scale. Prior testimony was not anywhere near 21. It's incredibly, it's deteriorated.
Well, I'm gonna allow that question. On cross-examination, you can certainly explore the basis and what her opinion was. So I'm going to allow that question. Go ahead, Coma.
Well, let me ask you about that score of 21. It's 21 out of how much?
30.
So what in what range is that?
Moderate severe.
Okay. And on your previous encounter with her on or your actual telehealth on November 29th, you reported that the score was 17, and that's moderate.
Moderate, yep.
And then on the GAD 7, on this particular day on December 6th, it was 19, right?
Yes.
And on the previous visit, it was 14?
Yes.
Okay. So as far as your observations of her on December 6th, did you notice anything different about her speech and language?
No.
How about her mood? What did you note her mood to be?
Anxious.
And the affect, fair to say, consistent with mood, meaning anxious, right?
Yes.
And thought process?
Thought process was linear and goal-directed.
And thought content, did she indicate to you whether she was experiencing any auditory or visual hallucinations?
No.
Any delusions?
No.
Any suicidal ideation, a plan, or intent?
No.
And as far as your observations of her during this interaction, this in-person visit, did you observe any signs of psychosis?
No.
Did you observe any signs of mania?
No.
Did you observe any signs of obsessive thoughts or compulsive behaviors?
No.
Now, when you met with Lindsay and Patrick on December 6th, did she or did they report why Patrick was there?
I don't recall if they indicated why he was there. I understood it to mean he was there to provide collateral and support for her.
Were you aware that he was coming to the appointment?
I don't recall if I was aware beforehand or not.
And you had engaged in a pretty significant my chart back and forth with her in the days preceding this this meeting on December 6th, right?
Yes.
Did she ever indicate to you in those messages that she wished to bring him along to one of the visits?
No.
Fair to say, when a person brings a collateral and is willing to have somebody speak, you're more than happy to get that information.
Absolutely.
This person, this collateral person, can they offer you a different perspective about the patient and what they're going through or what they're, how they're presenting?
Yes.
In this December 6th meeting, or the visit, did she report to you some changes in her sleep or a significant concern for sleep?
I would have to review the note. What I remember is that the sleep really hadn't improved much beyond getting a few hours, waking up in the middle of the night, maybe piecing together.
Okay.
More time.
And fair to say, there was some conversation to go back and talk about when symptoms started, mm-hmm. and try to get to kind of the root cause or what they believe the root cause of her symptoms were.
Yes.
And did Lindsay and Patrick report to you the connection with the Zoloft medication in September as a concern?
Yes.
And that at that they reported that, or she reported, that exact night went from 25 to 50 milligrams. I didn't sleep for 48 hours and I wasn't tired.
Correct.
So that's in your note as a quote, meaning that's directly what she told you?
Yes.
Okay. Who expressed to Lee Clancy on this particular meeting? Did you express to Ms. Clancy thoughts that you had about her diagnosis based on your interactions over the last few weeks?
I did.
And what was that?
I discussed with her and her husband the possibility of potentially an underlying bipolar disorder. I based this on several factors, one of them being that she had such what we call an activating response to the Zoloft. It's unusual for somebody to describe taking Zoloft and then going 48 hours without sleep and not being tired. So that raised my clinical suspicion a bit. And she had been, I would say, having difficulty tolerating other antidepressant medications that we had been trying to have her take since then. And so again, I'm wondering if it's because potentially there might be an underlying, what we call mood disorder, bipolar disorder.
And as far as the information that you had about her past psychiatric history, were there any indicators to you about manic episodes?
No. So I do recall in reviewing Julie's note prior to meeting with Lindsay, she filled out what we call a mood disorder questionnaire. It's like a screener somebody can do to assess history of mania and bipolar disorder. Lindsay had, it was a negative screen. So there's three questions. One question has 13 different symptoms. You have to score 7 out of 13 on question one, but also in question two, it asks about, are the symptoms happening at the same period of time? And then it asks about any functional impairment from the symptoms. So I recall the three symptoms she did endorse were not sleeping for that period of time with the Zoloft and not feeling tired, having racing thoughts and trouble concentrating. None of the other symptoms did she endorse. They did occur at the same period of time. And I don't want to be inaccurate, so I can't remember what she said for functional impairment, but I believe it was minor impairment.
Okay, and so the fact that those were reported, but ultimately the full screen revealed negative for potential mania.
I did also consider, though, that the MDQ is less specific when it comes to bipolar 2 or bipolar not otherwise specified. There's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. Both have mania symptoms as part of the diagnosis. Bipolar 1 is usually more severe in that it's typically, you know, a patient might be hospitalized or it causes greater functional impairment. Bipolar 2, it's a shorter duration and typically less functional impairment.
And as far as determining diagnostically whether somebody might be presenting with bipolar disorder, is there a particular tool you use in your trade to try to assess that?
Typically something like the MDQ, and then you'll do more of an interview asking the patient about symptoms specifically and if they can ever recall a time where this may have happened in the past, because sometimes patients can't always remember when they're manic. So I was glad to actually have Patrick in the visit because he could sort of help us look at Lindsay's history more longitudinally, or at least since the time he knew her.
Okay. And as far as, so those tools that you're talking about, the MDQ, kind of screening tools that you use, in practice. Is there another tool that you use to assess whether a person meets particular criteria to be diagnosed with bipolar 1 or bipolar 2?
There are others, not ones that I've used.
So are you familiar with the DSM-5?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. So, well, that's not the end all be all. It mm-hmm. is a guide that tells you specific criteria, how to determine if episodes are manic or depressive, right? When it comes to bipolar.
Yes.
The difference between mania and hypomania.
Yes.
And so while you noted that there were some concerns reported, did what was reported to you rise to the level of diagnostic criteria for bipolar disorder?
Not at that time.
Okay. And when you explained this to them, your thoughts about her reactions to the medication and these reported prior symptoms, did Patrick and Lindsay seem receptive to your diagnosis?
I recall Patrick saying, "My wife is not bipolar." Lindsay looked at me. She did not say anything.
Okay. And was this the first time in this meeting on December 6th where you broached that issue or mentioned that?
Yes.
Did the conversation continue about symptoms and managing symptoms after that?
Yes.
Were you able to get any more specific information from Patrick during that meeting? Not what the information, what he said particularly, but did you get additional specific information that kind of helped you assess whether you would change your diagnosis at that point?
No.
And were there still concerns in that particular meeting that the focus was trouble sleeping and the potential for addiction?
Yes.
As far as recommendations, did you talk about what's called tapering medication?
Yes.
And what were your recommendations regarding tapering?
So we talked about her concerns about the benzos. And we decided to come up with a plan to taper off of them.
And the last that had been reported to you via the MyChart messages was that she tried not taking it at all, ended up having horrible thoughts and felt deeply depressed, then took it and felt better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So was it realistic to recommend completely stopping?
No.
So what is a taper? Like, why do you recommend tapers?
I recommend tapers to slowly get somebody off of something. And tapers can be useful because we might have somebody at a dose and they might say, "Oh, I'm too anxious to stop this," or "I'm not ready to step down to another level," and we can kind of keep them on it longer. But at this point, since I had met her on November 29th and throughout the MyChart messages, there was multiple concerns voiced about benzodiazepines. And again, in this visit, so I even did what's called a CWA assessment, which is something we use to determine if somebody's having actual withdrawal from benzodiazepines or alcohol. Again, I really wanted to show her I was assessing this and taking this seriously.
When you say CWA assessment, is that an acronym for something?
Yes. So it's
what are the letters, just for the record?
CIWA.
Okay. And did you, when you do that assessment, does it give you some sort of score?
It does.
Ask the questions. And what was her score when you did that CIWA assessment?
1.
And what does that mean?
Minimal to no withdrawal. The only symptom she reported was anxiety. Her blood pressure was normal. Her pulse was normal. She had no nausea, no vomiting, no tremor, no tactile disturbances. People in withdrawal from benzos or alcohol will sometimes feel like there's bugs crawling or pins and needles. Auditory disturbances, so hearing things, seeing things. No sweats, no headache. She was oriented.
So with that, and knowing that she wasn't in withdrawals for Ativan, did you still recommend the taper and an alternative?
I did.
What was that?
I recommended Valium. The reason I recommended this is she had discussed rebound anxiety with me at our very first visit, feeling that rebound anxiety above her baseline once the benzo wears off. Valium has an extremely long half-life. It can, as in like 100 hours. It has a longer clinical duration of action. So I wanted to offset the chance that she would experience rebound anxiety. And it's often used when we're tapering somebody on shorter acting benzos. It's common practice to switch to longer acting benzos to do this.
And did you also have conversations about the other medications that had been at issue, the mirtazapine and the Seroquel?
Yes.
What did Lindsay Clancy express to you as far as Seroquel? Did she want to continue with that?
No.
Did she explain why?
So she felt like when she took Remeron and Seroquel together, she felt weighed down and exhausted, but her mind was still awake and alert, and she just didn't seem to think there was a benefit to being on it.
And so did she express to you a desire to want to go back to trialing Prozac?
Both Lindsay and her husband expressed that that was their preference.
And was that something that you agreed with?
I did. I had shared with them that I had concerns. This could be bipolar. It's in my differential diagnosis, which is just all the typical diagnoses we might be considering. And that typically SSRIs are contraindicated, but she did have that history of being able to tolerate Prozac at 20 milligrams and do okay with no mania. So I thought that's what they were wanting to do, so we could do it. We could try it.
When you say contraindication,
okay, sorry,
what does that mean?
It means typically not something you would want to do if you were sure somebody had bipolar disorder, because if you put somebody on just an SSRI or like Prozac, like Zoloft, it can create a scenario where people are flipping back and forth between manic symptoms and depressed symptoms, or they're called rapid cycling. It's not that antidepressants or SSRIs are never prescribed in bipolar disorder, but you often would want to have a mood stabilizer on board at the same time.
And so, despite your suspicions, you listened to the patient and went along with her request.
Yes.
So at the conclusion of that meeting, did you indicate that she could discontinue the Seroquel at that point?
Yes.
With the plan that she was going to restart Prozac?
Yes. Which I had been recommending the Prozac. Earlier, I believe even on November 30th, I had recommended it.
And with that previous recommendation, it was in addition to the Seroquel.
And the Remeron, yes.
So after this meeting, on December 6th, did you have additional communications with Lindsay Clancy via the MyChart messaging on December 7th?
Yes.
And fair to say that those communications started as early as 9:48 a.m. when she sent the first message, right?
me just make sure. Oh, yes. Yes.
So on December 7th at 9:48 a.m., she sends a message saying, "Hi, Rebecca, last night did not go well at all. I took the Valium and melatonin and slept only slept from 9 to 1. Then around 2, I got desperate and took 25 milligrams of Benadryl and only slept about one more hour. What can I do? I really need help." So that was the message that you came into on December 7th, right?
Yes.
And did you respond to her in the messaging app?
I did.
And what was the response?
Trying to find the sequence.
Be at 10:19 a.m.
Then it gets cut off. Okay. So I discussed, I mentioned, so your husband made a good point yesterday. Despite taking the Ativan in the evening, you were still only able to get a 5-hour stretch of sleep, which, yes, is improvement, but does sort of dispel the notion that benzodiazepines are the only thing that are helping you sleep right now, as you are still getting less than the target of 6 to 8 hours with Ativan, and the Valium did not help for sleep much at all. My next step in this case is to try a higher dose of Seroquel on its own. Are you feeling any subsequent loss of energy, exhaustion, fatigue with lack of sleep?
Why would it be the next step to increase from 75 of Seroquel to 100?
So she had been taking 50. So I was suggesting 75 to 100 would be my next step. Because again, bipolar is still on my differentials, and now I have the data that she only slept 2 hours. So I asked her the follow-up question, are you feeling tired, or, you know, are you feeling exhausted, any subsequent loss of energy? It's still in the back of my mind that this could be bipolar.
So as far as the Seroquel goes at that point, creeping up the dosage, do you get now from the using it to treat insomnia to using it to treat something else like bipolar?
Correct.
And so that piece of it about feeling subsequent loss of energy and exhaustion, fatigue, why ask that?
Patients can have insomnia because they're anxious or because they're depressed, but typically they're exhausted or they're tired the next day, and it really does affect them. If a patient has an underlying bipolar, they could go on 2 hours of sleep and not feel tired at all, and that's unusual.
And so that is one of the signs, potentially, of a manic episode?
Potentially, yes.
So on December 7th at 10:33, she responds, "No, the weird thing is I don't feel tired at all." And she says, "So just Seroquel tonight, ? I feel like I'm going to panic without a benzo with it." And then again at 11:44, another message, "Would I be able to do the Valium with Seroquel? Is that a safe option?" So again, in this exchange with her in my chart, she's asking you questions to clarify what you've said and also alternatives to address the issue, right?
Right.
And as far as her questions go, and then her response about not feeling tired, how did you respond in the message?
So she kind of sent those in succession. So the "I don't feel tired, would I be able to do the Valium with the Seroquel?" So I respond by, "If you're not sleeping well with the Valium alone, there's no need to continue it, and I will prescribe a short taper to get you off benzos altogether. Because you are not tired at all and had a significant reaction to Zoloft at 50 milligrams, I'm concerned this is an underlying mood and bipolar disorder. I know you and your husband did not necessarily agree with that, but I feel that I'm going to send along this information to review." So I sent her a list of symptoms of bipolar, risk factors, so that she could have it to refer to.
And again, at this point, the only symptom she was reporting of mania was this not being able to sleep and not feeling tired, right?
And the racing thoughts and the trouble concentrating.
Okay, is that things that she had reported to you in your visit on the 6th?
No.
Okay, in these messages that she was sending to you in her on December 7th, she didn't talk about racing thoughts, did she?
No.
Okay, she just talked about the sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But based on a review of her history, she had at one point indicated that she was feeling those in relation to a symptom she was describing. Is that
correct?
So at this point, what do you recommend her to do?
I explain the importance of knowing if this is bipolar is significant because SSRIs like Zoloft and even Prozac would be contraindicated. My recommendation is to do 100 of milligrams of Seroquel tonight, 200 milligrams of Seroquel tomorrow night, 300 milligrams on 12-9, 400 on 12-10, and we will hold there. I actually say hold the Prozac as I'm concerned this is a hypomanic mixed manic state.
And what about the Remeron at that point? Where did this fall into the mix, if it fell in at all?
I had recommended a very short taper on December 6th. I think I advised her to take half of a 7.5 milligram tablet for 3 nights, but in her message to me on December 7th, she had not taken it that night. So I had assumed she had just stopped that entirely.
Okay. Now, after you sent that message at 12:32, did she respond at 2:53, indicating that she would stick with that plan and that she said she needed a refill on the Seroquel because she only had 30 25 milligram tablets?
There were actually, she did say that. There were actually a few earlier messages as well that day. I provided an alternative. One, as an option, it quickly came into my mind, oh, we're thinking about Prozac. We could add Zyprexa on board because there's actually a combination pill of Prozac, Zyprexa. The brand name is Symbiax, and it's for bipolar. And I said, for our purposes, we can prescribe them separately and take them both for the same effect. And I asked her to let me know which one she would prefer. And she responded, I think I would like to do the Seroquel with the Valium taper.
Okay, so that suggested alternative actually was on at 12:37.
Correct.
And then at 1 o'clock, she elects that she'd like to do the Seroquel with the Valium and asks for you to call in the Valium and the Seroquel.
Yes.
Okay. So that's on December 7th, right?
Yes.
On December 8th, at 6:35 a.m., she sends you a message saying, did well last night, need Valium, feeling panicky, don't know if ready to taper as quickly as planned.
Yes.
Kind of paraphrasing, but.
Yeah, she exclaimed, I actually did really well last night with the Valium and Seroquel. I mostly slept from 9 to 5 with a few wake-ups, but was able to go back to sleep. She was concerned that she felt like she needed to take the Valium around 5 p.m. because she was feeling panicky. I feel really dependent on it. Can I taper any slower?
And what was your response to her request for a slower taper?
I said, I'm hesitant to taper any slower. Remember, Valium has a really long half-life, 100 hours, so you will have some on board in your system throughout the weekend.
And why were you hesitant to taper any slower?
I felt like she was anxious about being dependent on it, and so I was trying to facilitate the process of tapering her off, and I was clinically thinking we could cover her symptoms of anxiety as we titrated the Seroquel, because Seroquel actually has several clinical trials that show it has really good efficacy for anxiety.
And this conversation about the request to taper, that actually goes into December 9th of 2022, correct?
Yes.
And her response to your indicating you were hesitant to taper, she indicates that she took the 5 milligrams of Valium and that she didn't have any left and that she was afraid that she was going to take Ativan.
Correct.
And had you recommended to take Ativan as an alternative or in lieu of Valium?
No.
Were there any more communications on that day, December 9th of 2022?
Yes.
What were they?
Later that afternoon, Lindsay and her husband called.
Okay. And so did you, fair to say they call the clinic, leave a message, and then you call them back?
Yes.
And when you called them back, what was the nature of that conversation? What did you guys talk about?
Her symptoms, we discussed that the plan was to taper the Valium over the weekend, but they both agreed that Lindsay's symptoms were too acute. She's sleeping better, but still waking up with panic symptoms and intrusive thoughts, feels numb, has thoughts of SI, but no plan and no intent. I encouraged her to engage with Women and Infants in Rhode Island to complete an intake for a partial hospitalization program. But she was able to contract for safety over the phone with her, with the three of us on the phone, that she didn't have a plan, no intent, that she would reach out if needed. I did agree to continue the Valium until our next appointment, which was scheduled for 12:13. I prescribed it as 5 milligrams, but I advised her she could take a half tablet twice a day, so 2.5 milligrams twice a day.
Walk me through that. She mm-hmm. She had indicated to you that she wanted to slow the taper.
Yes.
And then you said no, that wasn't a good idea.
Right.
And then on the 9th, they call you and say that she doesn't want to taper. She wants to stay where she is, right?
I think it was that same day. The messages were earlier in the day, and then later in the afternoon, around, it's noted at 16:10, so 4:10 p.m., that she and her husband then called, advocating to stay on.
And in advocating to stay on the Valium, that she reported she's still waking up with panic symptoms and having intrusive thoughts, feeling numb, right?
Yes.
So, in addition to agreeing to continue the Valium, did you make a recommendation about the Seroquel?
Continue the titration.
So when you say titration, what does that mean?
So I had recommended 100 on day one, 200 day two, 300 day three, 400 day four. This is the manufacturer recommended titration schedule to treat manic symptoms. Because again, I had shared with her, I think this is a mixed manic hypomanic state. So that's what I was targeting.
Okay. And so, as far as Seroquel goes, there's, some guidance you get about Seroquel that's put out by the FDA, right?
Correct.
And it, talks about dosage and administration for every drug, essentially, right?
Yes.
And, as far as Seroquel goes, there is a different recommended dosages or ranges for different mental illnesses that you're treating.
Correct.
So in this instance where bipolar is in your differential diagnosis and you're recommending titrate up to 400, is that consistent with the thought that you believe she had bipolar diagnosis?
Right. So I was thinking it was a mixed manic state or possible hypomanic state. A mixed manic state is when patient has symptoms of mania, like poor sleep, no loss of energy, but they also can feel depressed, numb, suicidal. It's sort of like it's a mixed state. It's a mixture of symptoms. That a mixed state presentation, is clinically acute. It's unstable. So I really wanted to get the manic symptoms under control. I really wanted to get her to sleep.
And so going up slowly to 400 milligrams, what's the recommended dosage range for somebody with bipolar disorder of Seroquel?
For somebody, a manic presentation, you can titrate over days rather than weeks. You can actually go up to 800 milligrams.
And so, even though you had previously indicated to them in your December 6th meeting that you were agreeable to discontinuing the Seroquel, mm-hmm. based on our presentation in the days following, Did you change your recommendation?
Correct.
And with the increased Seroquel that you had requested as of December 9th, she was reporting sleeping better, right?
Correct.
And that had been something that had been a recurring concern in your interactions with her, sleep?
Yes, my understanding was that she had been sleeping poorly since October.
And was there, when you say you were recommending partial hospitalization during that phone call, did you give a particular place in which you would recommend her to try to seek treatment?
Women and infants.
And that's in Rhode Island?
Rhode Island.
And are you familiar with whether they have particular perinatal or postpartum programs there?
They specialize.
After that call with the Clancys on December 9th, when was the next time you had contact with Lindsay?
December 9th was a Friday, so I believe it was Monday, December 12th.
Now, people are able to send my chart messages all hours of the day, every day of the week, right?
Correct.
But in this instance, you did not receive any messages over the weekend?
No.
So the next my chart exchange was actually on December 12th of 2022, correct?
Correct.
Now, on December 12th, do you recall who initiated the contact via my chart?
Lindsay.
And at 1:59 p.m., she sent a message to you saying, I've been noticing on my Apple Watch that my heart rate has been fluctuating more than usual. It has been going from 56 to 136 within a matter of minutes. I'm wondering if this is a side effect of the Seroquel and if there's anything I should do about it. Thanks, Lindsay. Do you remember getting that message?
I do.
And again, at that point, as of December 12th, you had recommended the titration plan going up to 400, right?
Yes.
So by that Monday, where should she have been if she was following your instructions?
400 milligrams.
And did she report to you whether she took 400 milligrams of Seroquel?
She reported she was taking 200 milligrams.
Did she say why?
No.
But your recommendation was that she should have been up to 400 at that point?
At that point, yes.
As far as the concerns about the fluctuating heart rate, were you able to address that with her in a response?
Yes. I explained that medications like Seroquel can cause something called orthostatic hypotension, which is basically when you get up from sitting or standing, your blood pressure doesn't compensate in time, so it goes low and people can feel dizzy. I explained that the mechanism for that is alpha adrenergic blockade, so the alpha receptors that help us with like adrenaline. They're also part of the picture here with Seroquel. It's often accompanied by orthostatic tachycardia, meaning getting up from sitting to standing, your heart rate can fluctuate. I said both can be common in the first days of medication exposure or when the dose is being increased. It's generally benign, meaning non-harmful, and self-limiting, meaning it goes away on its own over time. I also advise it sometimes necessitates slowing a dose titration or dividing a dose into like two or three smaller doses.
Okay. And so with this response and trying to address these concerns, you're aware that she had spoken to the nurse that morning?
Correct.
And that she had expressed to the nurse a desire to get off the medications altogether?
Correct.
And what was your response to that concern that she had in the call to the nurse? What did you tell her?
I said, as long as you are aware of the risks, I don't think you've been on Seroquel long enough for it to have a positive benefit on your mood or anxiety. But if you've noticed benefit, if you have noticed benefit, the risk would be worsening of mood and anxiety upon stopping the medication. We also discussed tapering off the Valium, which I'm fine with, if you would like to send, like me to send along the taper schedule. Being off medication might help you see where you are at baseline, but I do think you are experiencing significant and severe symptoms of postpartum depression that needs to be treated. I acknowledge that medication alone is not always the best option for someone, but often it's part of the puzzle. Other treatments include counseling, support from others, exercise, healthy diet, yoga, and relaxation techniques. I know this has been brought to your attention several times, but I strongly, strongly recommend a partial hospital. Hospitalization program so that you can get started on utilizing these
hospitalization program. The thing about these exchanges that made you concerned that you had to kind of raise the level, meaning call her in for another meeting or make any sort of recommendations for inpatient hospitalization?
Not at this junction.
And why is that?
I wasn't, she wasn't reporting any acute safety concerns in these messages at this point.
It's just physical.
Just physical.
Side effects.
Physical side effects, yes.
So the messages continued on December 12th, correct?
Correct.
So at 2:44, Lindsay messages you saying, thank you, Rebecca. It does seem to be orthostatic, and I'm glad to hear that it's benign and no side effect. And then she tells you a little bit more about the prior nights, right? So she says, so the last three nights I've taken 2.5 milligrams of Valium and 200 of Seroquel. I have to say that I do like the way it makes me sleep very deeply and soundly for around 7 to 8 hours, but I don't like the way I feel in the morning and most of the day. Incredibly depressed and unmotivated to do anything at all. What would you recommend for tonight? Is that the next message after you explained to her the side effects?
Yes.
Okay. So, and for 10 p.m., you respond to her, don't you?
Yes.
And what did you recommend to address those concerns about incredibly depressed and unmotivated?
So at this juncture, I recommended at least continuing the 200 of Seroquel because at least now she's sleeping. So I felt like although I had recommended getting up to 400, we had gotten sufficient like activation symptoms down. She was sleeping. And the 2.5 of Valium. I think I advise that we need to give time for Seroquel to work for your mood. Let's continue to accumulate good nights of sleep, as this can only be a good thing in terms of recovering and feeling better moving forward. I would say take them tonight, and we will discuss further at our visit tomorrow.
And you had a visit scheduled for December 13th, correct?
Correct.
The message continues on that day where at 7:17 p.m. where she says, okay, thank you. I need to make our visit virtual tomorrow. I will not be able to make it to the office. Can you please change it to that? Is that
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So after having met in person with her on December 6th, having had subsequent communications with her all through the date of December 7th and kind of, again, changing a little bit about the medication plan and having further communication with her on December 9th and now December 12th, the plan was for her to again come in person on the 13th, correct?
That was my recommendation, yes.
Why did you recommend in person at that point?
This was somebody who was communicating with me every day, and I did feel that she had significant symptoms of depression, some mixed symptoms with mania, anxiety. I felt that her symptoms were severe and significant enough that I wanted to touch base with her weekly, and I wanted to see her in person. But again, I was okay with her doing virtual because I'd rather see her and lay eyes on her and try to treat her than not see her at all, if that would have made her just cancel the visit outright.
Because generally you do the same thing, whether you're in person or virtual, right? As far as getting the history, going through symptoms, asking how they're feeling, doing the mental status exam, right? So you meet with her on December 13th at 10:30, correct?
Correct.
And now this is a virtual at her request?
Yes.
And do you revisit with her kind of the recent events and the timeline of the changes that you've gone through the MyChart messaging?
Yes. I structured my note as like a recent treatment timeline. So I put, you know, 12-6, what had happened, 12-9, what had happened, and then I write update today, 12-13. That's sort of for me to like remember the treatment history that I've had with her so far.
Okay. Because while the MyChart messages are available to you, they might be in a different place, right? So they're not all contained within your same note.
Right. So I made note of, again, our visit on 12-6. I made note that she and her husband had called me on 12-9, and then I made note on the 13th. So I wasn't documenting all the MyChart messages, but just sort of my visit history with her and phone calls.
Okay. And so when you saw her in this virtual visit on December 13th, was she reporting improvement in her sleep?
Yes.
And how was she sleeping during that time period?
7 to 9 hours.
Okay. And that was holding at 200 on the Seroquel?
Correct.
And was she taking anything else daily?
Valium, 2.5, just once daily at night.
Okay. And while she reported sleeping better, she still had significant symptoms of depression, right?
Correct.
And what were the symptoms she articulated?
Hopelessness and, again, anhedonia, that feeling no pleasure, feeling numb.
Okay. And she also kind of complained of that racing heartbeat, and that's tachycardia, right?
Yep, the orthostatic tachycardia. So I recommended holding a bit longer at 200 milligrams. At this juncture, she had been on 200 milligrams for 4 nights. I wanted to continue it for a full 7 nights. And then we were still discussing whether to taper benzos, and our plan was to kind of slowly phase them out at that point. So we were going to decrease from 2.5 milligrams daily to 2 milligrams for 7 days, and then we were going to reassess at our next visit in a week. I also provided psychoeducation about behavioral activation, CBT techniques to utilize for depression. I also recommended postpartum.net for support groups, and I reiterated that she consider a partial hospitalization.
And again, during this telehealth visit, you have these conversations with her, but you also do your mental status exam. You make observations of her, right?
Yes.
Did you observe any signs of mania?
No.
Did you observe any signs of psychosis?
No.
Did she articulate to you any suicidal ideation?
She had endorsed that she had had thoughts of it on the Edinburgh over the previous weeks, that she sometimes had thoughts of harming herself, but not at that visit.
Okay. And would that have been something you'd follow up on? Would that statement from the Edinburgh? Or
objection. Would that be something you'd follow up on?
No, I love it.
So, just to clarify, so again, the Edinburgh.
After coming from the witness, Judge, I'm sorry.
Objection overruled. Next question.
The Edinburgh is over the previous 7 days. So she had that thought sometimes when I asked her, are you currently having SI? It was no during the visit.
Okay. And it just was the response sometimes.
Yes.
And so did you ask further in your interaction with her on that day on the 13th about whether she was experiencing suicidal ideation?
Yes.
Did she say she was?
No.
Did she indicate whether she had any plan or intent?
No.
And as far as intrusive thoughts, did she speak about intrusive thoughts during that meeting?
No.
Did she tell you she was having horrible thoughts?
No.
She had previously used those terminology in your My Chart exchanges, correct? At some point?
I do remember the intrusive thoughts that she would mention. Intrusive thoughts. I don't recall horrible thoughts.
Okay.
In the My Chart messages.
As far as the intrusive thoughts, mm-hmm. were they things that you followed up on in your telehealth or in-person visit?
Mm-hmm.
And was she able to articulate to you?
Yes. Yes or no. Sorry.
Was she able to articulate to you what types of thoughts she was having?
Yes.
What were they?
Intrusive suicidal thoughts.
So thoughts of harming herself or just wanting to die?
Thoughts of wanting to die.
At any point did she ever indicate to you thoughts of wanting to harm her children?
No.
So at the conclusion of this visit on December 13th, what was the plan?
The plan was to continue Seroquel 200 milligrams and Valium 2 milligrams.
Okay. And again, in this December 13th meeting, did you also indicate to her that she should engage with other services like support groups or partial hospitalization programs or CBT?
I did.
Do you recall whether you received any MyChart messages from her after that visit on the 13th?
I did.
I actually
sent her a message on the 13th.
Okay. So on the 13th, you meet with her at 10:30. At 2:27, you sent her a message. Why?
I wanted to send along some more ideas and information on what she could do to help herself feel better.
Because even though she was reporting sleeping better, she was still presenting with these depressed symptoms, correct?
Correct.
And so in the message you sent her on December 13th, it's actually a fairly lengthy message that talks a lot about cognitive behavioral therapy, right?
Yes.
And the benefits of it, and sends encouraging words.
Yes.
Does she respond to you on the 13th?
No.
The next contact you have with her, is that in a MyChart message on December 16th?
Yes.
And December 16th, 12:50 p.m.
Oh, no, I apologize. The next contact with her, there was a telephone call on December 15th.
Okay. Was it with you or was it with a nurse?
It was with me and her husband and Lindsay.
Okay. Sorry about that. So December 15th at 3:53 p.m., you have a phone call with them. And what do they report to you in this phone call? What does Lindsay report?
They inform this has been the worst day for Lindsay, is having persistent intrusive thoughts of suicide, no active plan. But both Lindsay and Patrick agree that higher level of care may be necessary at this time. Discussed options, they state they are likely to go to MGH-ED as they have perinatal psychiatry as well as an inpatient psychiatric unit. Lindsay also deciding about McLean. This writer advised that they keep us posted and sign a ROI, release of information, so that we can communicate with treatment providers at higher level of care. Lindsay verbalized understanding and agreement.
So on this phone call that you had with them on 12:15, what prompted the recommendation that they go to the emergency department?
Again, they had described it as the worst day and was having persistent intrusive thoughts of suicide. And they were at the point where they were ready to get assessed for a higher level of care.
And was this different than some of the other communications that you've had with, or that you had had with Lindsay Clancy over the course of the weeks?
I would say so.
Okay. And so you talked to them about the process of going to the emergency department and the potential for going to McLean for inpatient?
I recall advising them that if they were to go to their nearest ER, which would either be BI Plymouth or Cell Shore Health, the process would be that they would get evaluated, but if they were determined to need to go to a higher level of care or an inpatient psych, those facilities did not have inpatient psych units. So they may be sitting there waiting for a bed at any first opening in the state, which could be, you know, up in, you know, Amesbury or Newburyport. But that if they were to go somewhere like MGH, MGH has a unit called Blake 11, which is a psychiatry unit, and oftentimes they prioritize admissions from their own emergency department. MGH and McLean are also combined under the umbrella of what's now MGB. So sometimes if somebody presents to MGH ED and there's no beds at Blake 11, they might reach out to McLean and try to get them in to McLean.
So you communicated all of this information to them to kind of give them options on yeah. The best course might be to get inpatient.
Yes, I summarized it in my note, but that's my recollection of the phone call.
Okay. And you're aware that that Ms. Clancy had been employed at Mass General as a labor and delivery nurse?
I was.
Okay. So they were familiar with that facility.
So I did ask, would you be comfortable with that? And they were.
And so, to your knowledge, after this conversation, did they go to the Mass General Emergency Department on December 15th?
They did.
And so then you were able to communicate with Lindsay via MyChart that next day on December 16th, correct?
She reached out to me on December 16th via MyChart, yes.
And she indicated to you... on December 16th at 12:50 that she, after visiting the ER yesterday, I opted to remain outpatient and pursue the partial program at Women and Infants. And Women and Infants, that had been the program that you had previously recommended in Rhode Island, correct?
Correct.
She indicates, I'm waiting on a call back for them to schedule. In the meantime, I want to know how to proceed with my meds. Do you still recommend the 2 milligrams of Valium and 200 of Seroquel nightly? Again, it's making me sleep well, but I'm not, but still not improving my mood. So I will need a refill on those meds. Please let me know. So in this particular message, she indicates to you that she was waiting to schedule with Women and Infants, correct?
Correct.
Are you aware that prior to that, Letitia Dukes had already initiated the referral process for Women and Infants?
Yes.
And so on this particular message, she's kind of updating you, but also asking you if she should stay on the same track for her medication.
Yes.
And what was your response? So December 16th at 1:14.
I said, hi, Lindsay. I know Letitia may have called you yesterday about information about Women and Infants, so I hope you were able to connect with her. Target dose for Seroquel treating depression is 300 milligrams, so we can increase it to 300 milligrams if you are willing. Yes, continue the Valium. Let me know what you think.
And why at this point did you recommend increasing now to the 300 after having recommended staying at 200 for the Seroquel?
The FDA recommended dose for treating depression, bipolar depression, Seroquel is 300 milligrams.
So on December 16th, you continue to have messages with, MyChart messages with Lindsay Clancy, correct?
Correct.
And any of, or do you know that she went to see her previous psychiatrist on that day, December 16th?
Yes.
Okay. And so in her messages later in the day at approximately 2:11 p.m., she indicates, I spoke with my original psychiatrist after my ER visit, and she recommended adding 25 milligrams of Lamictal to stabilize my mood. Is that something you would agree with? Had you ever talked with her about Lamictal before?
No.
Is it a drug that you kind of commonly recommend for people?
I do.
And was it something that you thought could be a good fit for this patient?
Yes.
And so in your response to her at 2:26 p.m., do you further talk about using it as a mood stabilizer?
Yes. I state absolutely lamotrigine works well for mood stabilization and depression. I talked to her about the side effects of it.
I'm fair to say those side effects are like rash and skin changes, fever.
Can we find out what the witness feels the side effects are rather than counsel?
Well, why don't we let the question be what was she told? All right? I think that's the proper question. So why don't you ask what was told or what was said or messaged to the defendant?
Can you tell us what you messaged her the side effects were?
So I recommended it needs to be a slow titration, meaning titration, you know, increasing the dose due to risk of SJS, which means Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which can be a very serious rash that somebody can get. There's a higher risk of it if somebody takes Lamictal, which is why the FDA recommends such a slow titration, 25 milligrams for 2 weeks, 50 milligrams for 2 weeks, 100 milligrams. You can't really go quick with it. But I also specified it can cause a benign rash with as a side effect. So any skin changes you notice, you want to be sure are not accompanied by things like fever, malaise, pharyngitis, swollen lymph nodes. Also watch for a rash that is purpuric or tender. Benign rash would be spotty, non-confluent, non-tender, and no systemic features like fever. Otherwise, I find this medication to be quite well tolerated. Take with food to minimize any risk of GI, such as nausea. I can send this to your pharmacy along with the dose change in Seroquel. Any luck with hearing back from women and infants?
So the Lamictal, am I saying that correctly?
Lamictal.
Is that something that you would add to the Seroquel?
Yes.
And why would you add it to Seroquel?
They work differently. They have different mechanisms of action, and they can work well together.
And so at that point, on December 16th, do you recall kind of what the last version of the medication recommendations were?
From me?
Yeah, so at this point, you added a medication. So what was on the prescribed or recommended list for you for her as of December 16th?
So I asked her if she needed me to send along Lamotrigine, and she said that she had had her psychiatrist send it along.
Okay, but as far as now what you know to be the medications that she's been advised to take,
correct,
what are they at this point, December 16th?
Lamotrigine, 25 milligrams, Seroquel 300 milligrams, and Valium 2 milligrams.
And the Valium, is that still a daily recommendation?
Yes.
At the end of that message that you just read, you asked her if there was any luck with hearing back from women and infants, correct?
Correct.
Did she respond to you in a message about what was happening with the women and infants? The next message at 2:33?
In 2:33, she said, unfortunately missed the call this morning from women and infants, but I did request them to call back. I'm hoping they do so today.
And you said that you'd also learned in this exchange that her other psychiatrist had already called in the Lamotrigine prescription.
Correct.
And then, did you have any further communication with her on 12/16?
I said, okay, sounds good. I hope so as well. And that was it.
Okay. When's the next time you spoke with her?
12/16 was a Friday, so I spoke to her on Monday, December 19th.
And again, did you speak with her via the MyChart messaging, or did you speak to her on the phone?
MyChart messaging.
And were you aware that on December 19th she had another appointment scheduled with Letitia Dukes for that morning?
Yes.
And in your communications with her via my chart, they started at 11:04 a.m. on December 19th?
Yes.
And does she indicate to you in that message that she is starting with women and infants partial hospitalization tomorrow, meaning the 20th?
Yes.
And that she's concerned because she has an appointment scheduled with you already, and she's asking what she should do about that, correct?
Correct.
And what was your response to her?
So she has an appointment, but should be in the program. Should I call and cancel or reschedule because she thought the program would be starting her medication? I said, I'm so glad you were able to get into the program this week. That's great. So feel free to call and reschedule. The only issue is that I am on vacation next week, so it might be 2 weeks out that we touch base again. If that's okay with you, let me know what you think.
Okay. And her response at 1:24, that says, I think since I'll be followed by women and infants, that 2 weeks out will be okay. My only concern is potentially needing more Valium before that. I'm trying my best not to take it at night, but have still been taking 2 milligrams every other night. Can we refill that just in case I continue to need it, right?
Right.
So at that point, when she sends that message saying she needs the new prescription for Valium, was that in line with the recommendations you made for a taper of Valium?
I had recommended that she take it daily.
Okay. And so in this, she indicates to you that she's trying not to take it at night, but taking it every other night.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And on December 19th, you respond, sure, no problem. When will you be out of Valium? And she responds, I'll run out tonight. And then you agree to send in the refill.
Yes, I wanted to make sure she had an appointment rescheduled with me, and then I would refill enough of the Valium to get to that next appointment.
And so did you refill the prescription based on what she reported she was taking, or what your recommendation was that she take of the Valium?
What my recommendation was that she take.
And so do you recall receiving a message on December 20th via my chart from Lindsay?
I do.
And she reported to you that she had been discharged from women and infants that day, correct?
Correct.
And that they recommended she find help getting off the Seroquel, and that she was indicating that she'd like to taper the Seroquel.
Yes.
Did you respond that day or the next day?
The next day. Her message came in at 8:05 p.m., so I responded the next morning.
Okay, 10:57?
Yes.
And what were your thoughts about her report that she was discharged and the recommendation for tapering the Seroquel, or getting off the Seroquel, I should say?
I said, I'm not opposed to that. However, I'm concerned she discharged you, as I do feel you could benefit from the groups and added support separate even from medication changes. In fact, if we're not going the medication route, I think groups and therapy are the treatment needed, as I feel the intrusive thoughts you've been having are nonetheless concerning, and I know they've caused you considerable distress. I'm also on vacation next week, so I'm hesitant to start a taper when I am not available to you for questions and concerns. Again, I'm open to starting a taper, but I want to be available to you as it happens. You mentioned you are connected to your previous psychiatrist. Would that be someone to consult as well?
And so when you sent this message at 10:57, were you opposed to the idea of tapering the Seroquel?
I understood that it was helping her to sleep, and I also understood that she felt as though she was still depressed, and she wanted to come off of it.
And in this correspondence back and forth on the 21st, was there any conversation about the lamotrigine and whether she took it as a mood stabilizer?
No.
As far as coming off medication, was that something that you thought might be a good option for her?
As I had expressed to her, I was hesitant. It could be done, but she would need a lot of what I would recommend to be group support, therapy, other types of treatment.
At that point, based on your interactions with her through the clinic, through all the messages, through the meetings that you've had, were you aware of whether she was getting any other support, like groups, other than Letitia Dukes and yourself?
No.
And this partial...
I apologize. Is she aware or no, she wasn't? She just said
okay,
no.
Sure. If you could just...
Are you aware of whether she was?
I was aware it was recommended. I was not aware that she was interacting with any groups.
And the South Shore Perinatal Behavioral Program, you have groups that are offered through the clinic, correct?
At that time, we did, yes.
And if she was attending groups through the clinic, would that be something that you would have access to or be noted in her records?
Yes.
And as far as your communications with her, did she report to you that she was attending any sort of groups or therapy at other places in the community?
No.
The only person you were aware of that she was communicating with was her previous psychiatrist, correct?
Correct.
And that's why you made that recommendation to consult with her?
Correct.
And what's your concern, or what was your concern for not being available to her while you were on vacation with a taper?
I wanted to be there to evaluate if the taper was going okay, if she was suddenly having a hard time sleeping again, so maybe I could recommend that we go back up, or, you know, just to reassure her, to be there for her while this was happening.
In your prior communications with her, she was very communicative with you about symptoms, about issues, about concerns, correct?
Correct.
And if you're on vacation, are you responding to my chart messages?
No. There would be someone that would respond. It would have been my nurse, and they would have consulted with the two other, and well, Julie, I had, believe her last day was the 22nd, but they would have consulted with the other NP there, but I would not be available, no.
And you were invested in this patient's care, weren't you?
Yes.
So on December 21st, after you made that recommendation that she not start the taper while you weren't available or consult with her psychiatrist, other psychiatrist, did you get a response from her at 3:57?
On December 21st?
Yes.
I see 3:47.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
So 3:47, she responds back to you, correct? And gives you some more information about the women and infants recommendation?
Yes.
And it reads, the psychiatrist at Women and Infants recommended a more general mental health, PHP, partial hospitalization program, right?
Correct.
Such as the one at McLean, which I'm open to. I'm also looking to schedule with a CBT therapist in Duxbury. My other therapist does have appointments this and next week, so I can follow up with her too. How would you recommend starting the taper? I will need smaller pills, as the ones I have now are all 300 milligrams. Right, that's her response?
Yes, she says her other psychiatrist does have appointments.
Okay. And in the meantime, she had also sent an email to the clinic. Are you aware?
I'm not aware.
Okay. Do you know if she spoke with the nurse at some point on the 21st?
Yes, I asked my nurse to call to, again, go over the risks of tapering, which could include worsening of mood, worsening of sleep, verify that this was really something she wanted to move forward with, remind her that I wouldn't be there.
Okay. And on December 21st, 2022 at 4:26 p.m., you respond to her in the MyChart message, right?
Right.
And you had expressed reluctance for the taper, but ultimately, did you provide her a plan for taper?
Right. I said, I know Nicole reached out to you and she relayed that you would like to proceed with the taper. I'm sending as 100 milligram tablets, 200 milligrams, two tablets for four nights, 100 milligrams, one tablet for four nights, 50 milligram tabs, half tablets times four nights, then off. Let me know if any issues.
And is that a standard or slow taper off of Seroquel being at a 300 milligram dose?
Considering the fact that she had only been taking it for a few weeks, yes. If she had been on it for months, I would have done a slower taper.
And And in addition to giving her that plan, you also had the nurse provide her with some information about DBT groups, correct?
Correct.
And what's DBT?
Dialectical Behavioral Therapy.
And how's that different from cognitive behavioral therapy?
Dialectical behavioral therapy, there's certain tenets to it, like emotion regulation, distress tolerance, interpersonal communication. There's a lot of skills to it. It's a very skills-based treatment. So we had recommended that as an additional support.
And the next time you had contact with the Clancys, when was that, after December 21st?
I believe that was my last contact with Lindsay.
Okay. As far as the perinatal behavioral health clinic at South Shore, you're aware that on December 30th, Patrick Clancy called in about his wife.
Correct.
And that he spoke to a nurse, Katrina Melanson.
Yes.
And the record reflects that he reported that she was safe, right? But she'd like to go to McLean.
I do recall that.
Okay. And he was advised to take her directly to the emergency department. You can't just go there to McLean, right?
Right.
In your experience?
In my experience.
And that he said he didn't want to waste a day in the ED. Is that your recollection of the record?
That is my recollection of the record.
And that he was looking just to get the bed that was offered the last time on December 15th.
Yes.
And it's fair to say that that's not how the process works?
They do not hold beds for that length of time.
Okay. And so then he was advised to take her to the emergency department or call 911.
Correct.
And was that the last contact that the South Shore Perinatal Behavioral Health Clinic had with Lindsay Clancy?
Yes.
You were never advised or got any messages from her after she went to McLean, did you?
No. We did check.
Okay. The answer is no. Go ahead.
Did you learn anything about her course of treatment at McLean after the fact?
We had been wondering if she would come back to us. We did review the Mass PMP, which is sort of a log of controlled scripts, and we saw that she had medications filled from her previous psychiatrist, Dr. Tufts.
And that would have been...
No objective move to strike. It's not responsive to the question about McLean. She's now talking about...
No, overall.
So the Mass PMP, what is that?
It is a database that shows when patients fill controlled scripts such as benzodiazepines.
And as a prescriber that has a DEA license, you're able to review that information for any patient?
Yes.
And so after the 30th, when the call came in about going to McLean, you're able to identify that she was prescribed additional medicines by a different prescriber?
Yes.
And she never came back to the clinic?
Correct.
During all of your interactions with Lindsay Clancy, did she always present with clear linear thinking?
Yes.
Was she able to express to you her concerns and ask appropriate questions when necessary?
Yes.
And was she able to advocate for herself and express that she had some knowledge base about some of these medications?
Yes.
And at no point during the time that she was your patient or that she was at the clinic, did she ever indicate that she was had a plan to kill herself or harm her children, did she?
No.
Thank you. Nothing further.
All right. Counsel, can I see you sidebar?
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.